Online noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jack and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen the distraction to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Meredith is reading a preamble for us today. Meredith.
Morning, everybody. I'm Larry, and I'm an alcoholic, and this is our AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. And we do not wish to engage in any controversy, and we neither endorse nor oppose any cause. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Larry. Welcome everyone to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, Larry. Welcome everyone to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an open meeting and all are welcome to attend, but we ask only alcoholics to share. If you're new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we have newcomers liaisons who are available to help. They can be reached via email at bgnewcomers@gmail.com. This email is in the chat for you to write down. AA quote of the day. This can be found in the chat feature to view at any time during the meeting. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Format of this meeting is that we will have a speaker who will speak for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which is step three, and then we will automatically split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When share, please be sure to your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions will end at 12:55, followed by the day counts and announcements and the Lord's Prayer. Kristen C. is reading how it works. Kristen?
How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to prepare and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description to the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thank you, Kristen. Today, we'll hear a talk on step 3. Step 3, meditation to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. Please give a warm welcome to Billy N. from Georgia.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I keep getting muted. I know I was made a co-host. I don't know who muted me. Anyway, good to be here. I am coming to you live from Pebble Beach, California, not from Georgia today. I want to make sure that I say, before I go on and say anything, I know step 3 was just read. I'll read it one more time. Made a decision to turn our will in our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. But I want to make a disclaimer. Out of respect for anybody here, because I know there are, 77 people here. I really don't care what your religion is. I don't care what your spiritual practice is. I really put everything, I try to put it in 2 buckets in life, my business and none of my business. And the more that falls into none of my business, the better my life goes. So who your God is none of my business. How you practice your spirituality and your relationship with God is none of my business. If you don't believe in God, that's none of my business, but I want to let you know that I have total respect for you. I also say that because I didn't believe in God for quite a while. And I'm not ashamed to admit that whatsoever. I do want to read something out of the big book quickly, not a lot, because I hate being read to in meetings. So I don't want to violate my own rule. But I want to read this. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how do we find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. For we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. So I love those paragraphs in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think the best thing I can do today is to tell you a couple of stories that I don't get to tell a lot or talk about a lot, and to share my experience as a struggling person with the topic of God. And I don't struggle with that topic anymore and haven't for a long time. But that could also make me delusional. Like, my sobriety date's January the 5th of 1990, which basically means I got sober in kindergarten, right? And it would be very easy for me, because that's my sobriety date, and on that date, I was only 23 years old, would be very easy for me to think I'm a first-time winner. But I'm not. I came into AA in junior high school, in and out until I was 23. But because I've been here a long time sober now, it's very easy for me to convince myself. It's easy for me to convince myself of anything, by the way. But it's easy for me to convince myself that I'm a first-time winner. Hence the God subject. It's easy for me to think that I've just always believed in God. But that is so, so, so not the case. And if you're new, and that's who I really want to focus on. If you're new and you struggle with the concept of God and a higher power, I just want to let you know that that is perfectly, perfectly normal. You know, there's a lot of times we talk about the 40 questions, right? You know, we know those stupid questions that they ask you in probation officers and other places. Did you drink in the morning? Did you black out? I mean, why didn't, just give me a list of questions I can answer no to. Be a lot easier, right? And there's a lot of drinking in the morning that doesn't count anyway, in my logic. But when it comes to God, this is a very, very, very personal issue. So what I want to share with you is just a couple of things that happened to me over time. Number one, probably the most important thing I ever heard on this subject, was from two men named Joe and Charlie. Now, getting sober, when I got sober, I had the privilege of hearing them for the first time and then hearing them many times. I am a devoted, devoted, thankful, always thankful fan of those two men for a lot of reasons. They didn't have a lot of pomp and circumstance. They didn't think they were experts. They were just two guys who loved the Big Book and talked about the Big Book a lot. But one thing that they said that caught my attention was that in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are a lot of people who have a problem that I'm going to describe to you. And that problem is, I don't always read what is in the book, and I don't always hear what you say. And the more I read and the more I hear you say it, the more I make up my own version of what I just read or what you just said. That is a big problem of mine for a long time. So I'm going to give you two examples of that that I learned at Joe and Charlie that really, really helped me. The first is how it works. We hear that read all the time. I'm kind of a fan of groups that read things that are more about alcoholism than how it works, because I don't know how a newcomer can. But anyway, how it works, when you get to A, B, and C, the three pertinent ideas, do you know that I thought for a long, long time that it said God could and would if he were found? That's what I thought you were saying. That's what I thought I read in the book. And that's entirely opposite than what it says. It says God could and would if he was sought. There's nothing about finding there. And the other thing more important to that than changing words is the actual step itself that the leader of the meeting wrote. I'm traveling, so I have my second electronic device using for literature today. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. That is not what I heard or read. What I heard read was made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to God as we understood him. That's what I heard read. And Joe and Charlie were so clear that there is a difference between the care of God and God. And that I need to worry about the care of God. And so for me, by that time, a 26, 27-year-old man, no longer the young man in my 20s that came into AA when I met Joe and Charlie, the care of God for me was created on June 10th of 1935. Without that date, without the birth of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is no care of God in my life. That is just me, the type of alcoholic, and unfortunately, the way my crazy academic brain works. The care of God is so different than God. I have to make a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God. I truly do believe, regardless of what religion or spiritual practice you are into, for me, it's very simple. That by Mother's Day, 1935, a couple of weeks before June 10th, 1935, all the gods had had enough with people like me. People who had been disappointing their families and their loved ones forever. People that the Bible itself, even if I don't believe a word the Bible says, the Bible itself talks about people like me who've been drinking from the product made from grapes, who have red bloodshot eyes. Thousands of years, people like me have existed. And leading up to that Mother's Day 1935 and leading up to June 10th, 1935, two things had happened that were very important for me and the care of God. The Oxford groups found a solution for people like me. But they didn't know what the problem was. A doctor named Dr. Silkworth in New York, he knew what the problem was, but he didn't know the solution. And on Mother's Day of 1935, the day that Bill and Bob met in that gatehouse, which, you know, today is June 9th, right? Tomorrow is the anniversary of the birth of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob's sobriety date when we had two members of AA, but that Mother's Day, two things collided. For the first time ever, the solution and the problem collided. My life would not be the same today if that had not happened. And sometimes we undervalue what happened that day. Sometimes it's easy for me to drive down the road because work was too busy and life is too busy, and I don't get to golf enough or go to Metallica concerts enough, because the same thing always gets in the way of my life. This stupid thing called Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been coming to for 75% of my life since I've been 14 years old. But how could I think like that if I really gave proper credit to what happened on Mother's Day 1935? Without that happening, none of us are here today. And so before I talk a little bit about my finding God, my not playing the director, I just want to remind you that the rest of the world, they seem to be a little bit less selfish than people like me and a little bit more respectful, and they know how important that day is. After you get off this call, just Google or eBay a book. It's called The 80 Days That Changed the World. In 1998, Time Magazine hired 20 of the smartest history professors in the world because they wanted to publish a new book in 2000. And they gave those history professors, not AA archivists, not AA historians, just experts on world history. They gave them one assignment. And what was that assignment? Start on January the 1st of 1900 and end on today's date in 1998. And let us know the 80 most important days of the 20th century. If you multiply 365 by 98, that is a hell of a lot of days. But if you get a copy of that book, and this Saturday I'm speaking on the traditions at Founders Day, and I will have that book in my hand. But if you get a copy of that book, go about 15 pages into the section on the 1930s. And you'll land on June 10th, 1935. Where it says a broken stockbroker from New York met a broken surgeon from Akron, Ohio on this day. And from that meeting led to the birth of Alcoholics Anonymous that has saved millions of lives of alcoholics and has even shared their solution with other organizations that help people with other problems. I believe that the God I didn't even believe in had a lot to do with that meeting. I'm even open-minded enough to believe today that the gods of all of us in this meeting got together and had a group conscience and just said, we've had enough of it. We got to do something. We need a solution for this problem. And that's why I started out by saying, what God you believe in, what your spiritual practice is, that's none of my business. We're one big tent in AA, and as I always say, every circus needs a tent, and there's no greater circus than Alcoholics Anonymous. None. So what happened to me? This is what I want to share with you. Because not everybody has the sudden kind of, imagine Bill going to meet Bob. Bill had been unsuccessful for 5 months, 12-stepping people. He was zero for like 1,000. And what did Dr. Silkworth tell him before he went to Akron? You can't tell drunks that you were in your hospital room in the middle of the night and that God blew your window open and that the wind came in and you felt like you were floating on a mountain. Like, drunks don't want to hear that. You can't lead with God. You have to lead with a medical estimate of a description of your drinking. And you got to get them to the Me Too moment, the most important moment for any newcomer, when they realize that I have the same problem as them. Until they know I have the same problem as them, they will not take my solution. So what is it like when you meet Joe and Charlie, think you did the steps, are an active member of AA, and you don't believe in God? It can be a pretty, for me, I'm not telling anyone here that if you don't believe in God, you can't be successfully sober. I am open-minded to all. But for me, I thought maybe AA wasn't working. Now, my brand of theology is not a common one. I believe in natural theology. What that means is that I don't believe in God because of what I have read or what someone else told me. I believe in God because of what I have witnessed and observed. I believe that I have witnessed and observed things that in my own reasoning can only be made possible by something other than human power. That's my experience. In April of 1995, I did not believe in God. Now, I don't blame my religion. I blame my crazy brain. I don't think it's because of how I was raised. It's because I don't believe anything. My brain thinks like a calculator. You know, I like complicated math, and I like to remember things, and things that have served me no useful purpose in life, by the way. But some woman who I couldn't even tell you who today, at a meeting of AA, suggested a book for me to read. That book was called Never Alone by Joseph Gerzon. I'm not saying you have to read it. I'm not recommending that book. I am not affiliating it with AA. I am just simply telling you my story, that that book changed my life. And at the end of that book, I was shocked when this spiritual author writes that he's visited all the most spiritual places on earth, and the closest thing he can find to what's described in the Bible is in the basement of churches, where they embrace sinners instead of judging them. I felt like I got hit by a hammer when I read that book, but I still didn't believe in God. But you see, that's why you stay and have a home group and a sponsor and stay active in the steps. Because the one power, even though there are a lot of speakers who say they have this power, I just want to share with you that I can safely tell you that no human being does. Nobody has the power to schedule somebody else's spiritual experience. Nobody. I cannot tell somebody when they will have theirs. But I will end my talk by telling you about mine. But I would have only been there to witness it because I was an active member of AA. If I was not, if I had given up. You know, I've really started to hate that saying, don't quit before the miracle. That's really not our story in AA. Our story in AA is don't quit after the miracle. If you're a real alcoholic and you've stayed sober for a whole day, I just want to let you know you've had a miracle. It's not supposed to happen to people like us. I'm not worried about people who quit before the miracle of AA. I'm worried about people who quit after the miracle because life gets too good. But I want to share with you exactly what happened to me in my last couple of minutes. I went to the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1995 because I wanted to go. I think I paid it off in 1998. I probably still had a credit card balance 3 years later from that stupid convention. But here's what happened. There were three men I wanted to meet particularly. One of them I had already met, but I knew he would be with the other two. One of them was Tom I from North Carolina. The other one was Don P from Aurora, Colorado. And the other was a non-alcoholic named Jim Estelle, who ran the prison system in Texas and served our fellowship as a non-alcoholic trustee. I knew those three men would be in the same room at a corrections panel. I waited online. There was a line out the door, like 300 deep, and there was a fire marshal counting people. There was a guy next to me online. We started talking. He just got out of prison in Oklahoma the year before. He was 11 years sober. Got sober in prison. There was a bombing in Oklahoma 2 months before in April of that year. He told me that he asked his parole officer every week if he could go to the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. And every week his parole officer told him no. And he said, finally, his parole officer cursed him out and threw him out of his office and said, only two people can get you to that convention, God or the governor. And I will never forget being inside the San Diego Convention Center when this guy reached into his back pocket and took out a letter that looked like one of my old report cards that I never showed my mom. It looked like it had been in his back pocket since he got it. And he unfolded it and handed it to me. And in the bottom right-hand corner was the raised seal of the governor of Oklahoma. And on the top, it had his name and his address and his parolee number and his date of birth. And it said, to whom it may concern, so-and-so has the permission to attend the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous over July 4th weekend in San Diego, California in 1995. When I left that convention center that day, my agnostic armor took a huge hit. I could not explain what I just witnessed and observed. It didn't seem possible in the human world that I live in. But I would have never been there if I hadn't been an active member of AA. But what happened a couple of days later, I got back to New York City. And I think I have 2 or 3 minutes left. I got back to New York City on that Wednesday night. I went to a meeting of what's called the Oxford Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just called the Oxford Group. It's not the Oxford Group. It's just the name of an AA meeting. It used to be on, it might still be on 84th between Columbus and Central Park West. I went to that meeting and there was a very kind of classy, dignified, elderly lady sitting at the speaker table who I had never seen before. When she introduced herself, she said that her home group was in Tel Aviv, Israel. As she told her story, she talked about the tattoo on her right arm, the ink, that was a number from the concentration camp she was in as a child during World War II. And then she said that she was in San Diego last week, like I was. Except on Friday night, she was behind the stadium because she was chosen to carry the flag for Israel in the flag ceremony. And she talked about being behind that stadium in alphabetical order online with the other flag bearers. And she said at one point, her and the men from Saudi Arabia and Jordan and other countries that are normally enemies put their flags down and cried and hugged. About 6 months after that, I was at the General Service Office in New York City at the 11 a.m. meeting on Fridays. I come from a very Irish Catholic family. So Irish Catholic that, let's just say that the day that Charles and Diana were married, there was a refrigerator box taped around our TV that said that wedding will not be watched today. On a TV in this house. I'm not saying that's a good thing to say. I'm just telling you where I come from. On that day at GSO, the corrections chairperson for Ireland spoke. Now, if you are from my family, you know of places called the H Block and Maze. Those are where the prisoners of the Troubles went. All the Protestant and Catholic prisoners of the Troubles. I'll never forget that corrections chairperson saying that no outside organization is allowed into those prisons except for one night a week for 1 hour. And inside those prisons, the Protestant and Catholic prisoners are never in the same room except for 1 hour, one night a week in the group of Alcoholics Anonymous that takes place there. I believe in AA today, not because of miracles in my own life, because by turning my will and life over to the care of God, which for this alcoholic is Alcoholics Anonymous, I have witnessed miracles. And what I've also learned is that we're very bad at witnessing miracles in our own life. It's like the Member's Eye View pamphlet says. In Alcoholics Anonymous, on a daily basis, we get to see the blind see and the deaf hear. We witness miracles in other people's lives that are simply not possible in the human world. So if you're here today, I don't want to tell you don't quit before the miracle. Before what miracle? That you're going to all of a sudden have a new spiritual experience? I'm going to tell you no. If you're in this meeting today, a miracle's already occurred in your life. Don't quit after the miracle. Don't let someone else schedule your spiritual experience. And my experience is once you think you've had one, you will have others. Thanks for having me out today.
Thank you.